Helm, set a course.
Headed.
Engage.
Let's fly.
Welcome, one and all, to Discovery, a Star Trek podcast by Fantastic Geek, your official, unofficial Star Trek podcast. My name is Matt, and joining me, as always, is Pete. Hailing frequencies are open.
Emotionally overwhelming is what I do best. Discovery, a Star Trek podcast by Fantastic Geek for episode 503, Janal, comes to you now via unaffiliated professional associate.
And just a bit of fleet news before we launch into the episode. Going from Star Trek to Star Wars, let's first talk about this Empire magazine spread about the forthcoming Acolyte series.
Yes, all sorts of new stills there for that forthcoming series. But Matt, you could subscribe now to the Acolyte podcast by Fantastic Geek and get everything we're going to bring you prior to the series 2-episode premiere on Tuesday, June 4th.
And Pete, I appreciate that reminder that the Acolyte is that close. I must confess, in this last week where, because of pop culture comings and goings, there have been so many tears in my eyes, and we'll talk about some of those causes in a moment. I have to admit, Pete, I momentarily forgot that the Acolyte was moving ever closer, 6 weeks away as we record this. Pete, sticking with Star Wars, the Daisy Ridley movie script is done. Presumably that is, what, about second in line for production? So maybe that's something that's 3 years away, maybe 4 years away, but certainly looking forward to that.
Yes, and while she has not read it yet, she said she will read it next month. She'll read it in May. This is moving closer and closer. I would imagine very soon we'll start to hear the casting rumors crank up. But yeah, super excited that the new Jedi Order movie, as it's come to be known, is moving forward.
Pete, taking things to the MCU, taking things to Marvel here. You may have heard in the last year, Marvel is dead. Everyone's left it. Well, this is a week where the series X-Men 97 Episode 5, one of the best TV or film X-Men stories of recent memory, perhaps of all time. Also, news out of CinemaCon, left, right, and center. Pete, there might be some gas left in this whole thing called the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yes, based on the 9 minutes that were shown by Kevin Feige at CinemaCon, exhibitors are through the roof over what they will see come through multiplexes this summer. In addition to the popcorn bucket opportunities that the film will provide.
Not a joke, a true thing.
Yes. Between that, the Captain America Brave New World, Anthony Mackie, Harrison Ford still there. And Matt, the revised Thunderbolts asterisk, that is the official title now to the film.
I understand the words coming out of your mouth. I don't understand. So we're going to see, like, coming such and such date, the words Thunderbolts followed by an asterisk?
Yes. It had previously been seen in on like chairs and signage in the Florence Pugh behind the scenes video, and people are like, all right, like whatever that is, but that is officially the title. With the rumor of Captain America, of Thunderbolt Ross, President Ross, asking Sam Wilson to put the Avengers back together, I would imagine the asterisk on the Thunderbolts there, some kind of sideways reference to that. We're told the Thunderbolt has nothing to do with Thunderbolt Ross. So I don't know. But Matt, to reach back for an oldie, still a goodie, hashtag, it's all connected.
Pete, in this last week, we got from Paramount Plus announcements that were both, you know, highest high and lowest low. Part of me is still even surprised that they gave us the 1-2 punch the way they did. So where do you want to start, the Star Trek high or the Star Trek low?
I want to start with Paramount Plus needing a lobotomy. Yeah, great that the in-production season 3 of Strange New Worlds has guaranteed a fourth season renewal. Okay, maybe the most obvious call in Hollywood. Awful that the nearly finished fifth season of Star Trek Lower Decks will be its last. Begs the question, Matt, Discovery, now Lower Decks, is 5 the new 7?
First of all, I have continued to be surprised at how deep it cuts that Lower Decks is coming to an end. To me, and look, neither you nor I are subject to the knowledge of how much the show costs and what the viewership is and so on and so forth. But animation's got to be way cheaper than live action. And it's, you know, it seems to be popular. And here we are, Pete, less than a year after the awesome crossover and all of that. To me, it just does not make sense. I did find myself reflecting yesterday as the news was kind of fully digested. Was season 4 the best season of Lower Decks? Okay, maybe not. So big picture, I'd rather have only the great stuff. You know, I mean, most people's favorite episodes of the original series are from the first two seasons, not the third season. There's reasons why, but still, I guess it is what it is. We can celebrate the fact that it went 50 episodes. To your question, is 5 the new 7? I mean, in a short answer, yes, with more pulling at our attention than ever in terms of TV and film, with more offerings, with way more competition than the three broadcast networks that you and I grew up with. 3 became 4, gasp. Yeah, I think 5 is quite a landmark, and to have 50 episodes to... you know, of Stranger Worlds to cherish is certainly something to be celebrated.
Showrunner Mike McMahon and universe runner overseer Alex Kurtzman penned a letter here to the fans. We wanted to let you know that this fall will be the 5th and final season of Star Trek Lower Decks. While 5 seasons of any series these days seems like a miracle, it's no exaggeration to say that every second we've spent making this show has been a dream come true. Our incredible cast, crew, and artists have given you everything they have because they love the characters they play, they love the world we've built, and more than anything, we all love Star Trek. We're excited for the world to see our hilarious 5th season, which we're working on right now. And the good news is that all previous episodes will remain on Paramount Plus. So there's still so much to look forward to as we celebrate the Cerritos crew with a big send-off. Finally, thank you for always being so creative and joyful, for filling convention halls and chanting Lower Decks. We remain hopeful that even beyond season 5, Mariner, Boimler, Tendi, Rutherford, and the whole Cerritos crew will live on with new adventures. LLAP, Mike McMahon, and Alex Kurtzman.
That's all well and good, and that's lovely. And look, as we've said throughout our entire podcasting voyage, Pete, not just Star Trek, but all the shows we've done, every show was made possible by the fact that another show got canceled and opened up time and resources and talent to make that show possible. Nonetheless, well, let's start with this, Pete. The plug there for Paramount Plus, here's the long and the short of it. There is the there is the possibility that Strange New Worlds season 3, not 4 with its renewal, there's the possibility that 2025's Strange New Worlds season 3 might not even be on Paramount Plus, that it may be shut down by then. That is the wide assumption by anybody who sniffs.
100%.
So congrats that Kurtz, I've no doubt that Kurtzman and McMahon sat down, somebody started a Google Doc and sent it to the other, and they traded some passes back and forth. Congrats, PR person who then gave a read and was like, Alex, you know who pays your paycheck, right? We need to put a Paramount Plus thing in there, despite the fact that it's, you know, Rome burns here. But Pete, I'll look at the positive here. The notion that maybe they're floating the possibility, whether they have plans or it's just this magic thing that is Star Trek, the possibility of more animated or live action adventures from the Cerritos crew, I'll take that as hope. And I'll hope that, you know, David Ellison, who owns Skydance, that may have the inside track to buy Paramount, that maybe he's a lower decker too.
It's definitely a silver lining that we can, I would read into that, we'll see more of them. They're not going to make this overture and not have a plan for more. So whether they show up again on Strange New Worlds or they have some other plan we're not privy to, they went a step further by providing that here. Canceling out the tone deafness of, and you can watch all of the series on Paramount Plus right now. I mean, Matt, there is a scenario where at the end of this week, this press release needs to be revised because Paramount Plus has been sold and folded into Amazon or Netflix or Peacock or whomever.
Yeah, and I'll go light on the corporate stuff here only to say, at CinemaCon this past week, all sorts of broad claims came out of Paramount Pictures, from Damien Chazelle is going to make the next great film to this, that, to, you know, a whole bunch of things not related to Star Trek, including news that they're going to, not only are they still working on Kelvin 4, but they're going to do a Star Trek origin film and this and that, the other. Star Trek movies at Paramount Pictures, I will believe it when it actually starts to film. Until then, it's just hogwash that's meant to get a bounce in Wall Street.
It's the new Indiana Jones, man. It's like, really? We've been over the potential for brand confusion with so many of those characters currently on TV in Strange New Worlds. And now you're going to add to it this beginning of the Federation prequel movie, which I think is called Star Trek First Contact. Their film end is a mess. And this, as they're in post-production now on the Section 31 made for streaming TV movie. So I don't know. I got your text with, you know, the news about, you know, Strange New Worlds and Lower Decks. And it's like, it was just gutting. It really was, because come on, man. Like I get it, but at the same time I don't. And, you know, this, as we're moving towards the Starfleet Academy show, I'm just really concerned of the potential for that to get shuttered within all this, with news that they're building the largest set in Star Trek history. I could completely see the PR meltdown of, and that show, while we really liked what we had planned, and oh, you should have seen the set. Things just aren't possible right now. So, yeah, enjoy the 4 seasons of Lower Decks that are currently available, and the soon-to-stream 5th one. And, hey, more seasons of Strange New World coming. Like, I don't know how you look at the fourth season renewal of Strange New Worlds and say, all right, they probably have one more.
Last little sliver of kind of corporate news here. I'll just share the following, Pete. While Paramount is exploring what I think is a good merger with Skydance, in that Skydance wants to make kind of creative stories and so forth, people on the Paramount board in the last week and a half have been resigning over it. There are questions as to whether Skydance, which would value Paramount at about $5 or $8 billion, is that better than this other company, Apollo, that would value Paramount at $25 or $30 billion? So even that, even the idea of they're going to have a new storytelling home, Paramount will, like, even that, there's all sorts of, there's corporate drama, there's the potential for shareholder lawsuits, there's a weird shareholder structure where if you own Paramount stock, you actually, most people own Paramount stock don't actually have a say in the company. It's the family that owns there's layers upon layers that just throw a bunch of things in the future into question. And for us, of course, at the core of it is Star Trek.
I need someone to draw me a picture of how an offer of $27 billion is not as good as the lesser one.
Well, I could give it to you here's a real simple metaphor. Pete, if you own an apple orchard, okay, and I come along and say, Pete, I'll pay you, we'll just keep the number something, I'll pay you $100,000 so I can put a new apple slicing company in there. You say, okay. And then somebody else comes along and says, Pete, I will pay you $10 million to take your apple orchard that your family has owned since the Revolutionary War. I'm going to knock it all down. I'm going to make an arsenic factory. Which one do you want to sell to? That, which is a different question than which one is the best value for your shareholders.
Okay. I understand your statement a lot more here. But yeah, man, I'm so tired of this hanging over Star Trek. I really, really am. This at a time where, you know, Discovery has 7 episodes left that they rebirthed Star Trek on TV, and Picard had naturally concluded. Now 2 more of these series have concluded. Now we have just Strange New Worlds remaining. Yes, we have the Section 31 movie coming. Yes, we have the promise of Starfleet Academy. But yeah, it's a bummer.
For whatever it's worth, the last time a Star Trek show was made that it did not have to prop up or keep holding up a network or a streamer was Deep Space Nine. So there's that little nugget there.
One more nugget, Matt, for Star Trek Discovery, and just kind of twists the knife a little bit more. It came out this week. Callum Keith Rennie said that had Discovery been granted a 6th season, he would have remained on the show.
A little extra bit of bitterness, I suppose. Not from him, a little bitterness into the Star Trek air. With all of that, Pete, let's head into the mission briefing for this week's episode.
The USS Loscherer, am I saying that correctly?
Sure.
Loscherer, a tribute to cinematographer J.P. Loscherer, who received dedication at the end of episode 501, is moored at Starfleet headquarters next to Discovery as Captain Burnham walks and talks with Dr. Culber and Book about their upcoming trip to Trill. Culber has nothing on Locke, but Book knows Maul was born on the rough Kallur 5 to Cleveland Booker IV, who left when she was 8, but regretted it. Culber unearthed Maul's mother died when Maul was 14, and she joined a courier guild at 17. She was twice locked up by the Emerald Chain. Though she's been through a lot, book notes, she always comes out on top. Burnham has to bring a uniformed team to Trill, but Book wants in and maintains he's learned from his choices. Burnham tells him she'll think about it. She and Culber couldn't sleep with the magnitude of the mission on their minds. Culber asks if she's tried the Vulcan meditation that helped her as a child, and she asks if he remembers every detail he's ever been told.
Beat, that's because this is an episode where we get some extra Culber here. Always a welcome thing. We move to engineering, where it is noted by Tilly that Trill is big. However, what further points of data do they have in this ongoing search here? With the latest piece of the Cryptex key, they have noted the markings on it are Trill spots, the Trill equivalent of fingerprints, or insert other alien things to say, you know, fingerprints. We are looking for Jinal Bix from 800 years ago. Now, I have to confess, Pete, I watched this episode multiple times. There's dialogue here that says Jinal Bix was a symbiont host, and it's rare for them to live 800 years. Who, symbionts or hosts? I understand the whole Star Trek Trill symbiont versus host thing, and the general understanding that the host body is about as, you know, long-lived as a human body and all that. I'm down for all of the understanding here. I just feel like it was worded weirdly as to whether we are looking for the host body or the symbiont. I know we're going to kind of split the difference in a little bit, but they don't know that. Regardless, Burnham says to put the pedal to the metal because our baddies of Maul and Locke can't be far behind. Or maybe, Pete, they're already here.
Yes, and the guardians of the symbionts would have records, which causes Culber to recognize what this could mean for Adira and reuniting with Gray, who is training to become a guardian. They will accompany Burnham on the away team, along with Book. Lieutenant Christopher lets Burnham know her new crew member has arrived, and she meets Commander Raynor in the ready room. His quarters are fine, smaller than what he's used to, but he's used to having her job. That was a joke to break the ice, which he prepared for with Earther humor. While she's on the surface, she wants Raynor to conduct one-on-ones with the crew. He has no need, though, since he read their files, but she wants him to connect in person. He doesn't think that's where his skill set lies and would rather be used to track Maul and Locke, but she tells him connection isn't a skill, but a choice. After the way things went down on Kumau, her crew is skeptical about her decision to make him her first officer. This is his chance to break the ice.
And she introduces him to a bunch of people on the bridge here who we're going to get to know. Who knows, maybe we'll get like novels or comic books about them or something. And then also, Pete, what I want to point out might be an ADR moment. That's your additional dialogue recording moment recorded after the fact. Burnham notes, you know, because you don't see her face when she says this, that he will meet Detmer and Owo later. Something's up where we're not getting much of Detmer and Owo. You might say, but wait, Detmer's later, you know, appears later in the episode. Nope, they just say, here's Detmer before they cut away, and she is unseen. They jump the ship and crew to Trill. Adira is all excited to see Gray for the first time in a long time, 6 months of hollow conversations. Reno gives some passing advice before Adira leaves for the bridge. Reno turns to Stamets. Come on, Space Dad. Clearly there's trouble in paradise. Of course, Stamets can't fully see it right away. Can't be good. Anyway, Reno says, everyone's on a journey, coming together and coming apart. almost as though what's a
bit about Half-Life there, and the Romulan tricorder data that Stamets has been working on.
True, but I took particular notice of these lines here coming together and coming apart. Yes, it's of the moment with our young couple, but also maybe hand of the writer saying, what if this was the last season, though at the time of filming it was yet to be officially announced as such.
I'm more than convinced they had an idea. It just feels like they're rounding too many edges. Christopher informs Burnham Trill is denying her request to beam down. Guardian Z hollows in and explains the info she seeks has been protected for centuries, and she must answer the question, where does the fourth point? He can say nothing further. She answers the riddle correctly with Beta Z. The symbiont they seek is still alive in Kalzara Bix, who will speak to no outsider unless they answer that riddle. But they are the first to even approach. They may transport to the caves of Makala. Z has never heard of Lyric or the poem that pointed them there. His duty was only to ask the question and verify its answer, taking us to the title card, where a new animation this week, Matt, I wonder if it will continue where the first physical piece of the puzzle is placed onto the symbol.
Ooh. This is an episode written by Kyle Jarrow and Lauren Wilkinson, directed by Andy Armaganian. In the caves of Makala, Pete, a previously constructed set, because Star Trek is saving money. Kalzara Bix.
You almost sound convincing there.
In the caves, Kalzara Bix isn't just going to give the clue, Pete. She's got to make a whole meal of it. We got like 35 more pages of script to fill here. She's just not going to say, here's a little thing to put into your puzzle box. In fact, Kalzara can't give the clue. Only Janal can. They ultimately need to speak with the original host, you know, who is dead. Pete, Book and Gray are in this scene, but don't have anything to do until Book says, how can we do this? And Gray says that the Shantara will let the Janal personality be carried by someone else. Pete, if only they could include somebody else in the scene here. Wait, Culber can deal with the emotional upheaval of such a thing. So that's how you work these guys into the scene. It's all good stuff. Pete, take us to Starfleet / Federation HQ.
Ambassador Saru settles into his new office as Tarina comes bearing a Favonet plant gift. He misses Discovery, but is excited for the new challenge that starts with today's resource committee meeting on behalf of the planets he represents. As they head there, he thinks they may need to reconsider his description as handsome and erudite in their engagement announcement. Tarina will, of course, remove it if it embarrasses him, but she maintains both are true. Her assistant, Duvin, questions sending out the announcement today? Today. And Tarina will see Saru inside.
Pete, look, a Star Trek production should well understand at this point how to do the subtleties of Vulcans and so forth, and we get that here. I want to give a shout out to actor Victor Andres Treyas Turgeon, who's playing Duvin. I wouldn't know Victor from anybody else in the world, but he gets how to do that subtlety of, you know, clearly Duvin has concerns. Clearly he isn't sure about how to read the lay of the land. Clearly there are larger issues at play, and he's got, like, you know, 6 seconds of close-ups in order to sell all of that in this scene ahead of later scenes. And it's all done well, where you go, ooh, that guy has a major tempest in his heart, but it's a Vulcan, so what he did was look and pause for a moment. And it's just well written, well directed, well acted. Pete, take us to, we have an A story and a B story. Take us to the C story of this tale.
Tilly arrives to show Rainer around and facilitate introductions. And he calls her a chaperone, but he's combing through sensor data for signs of Maul and Locke. She asks for permission to speak freely and explains Zora's monitoring for them, but he didn't give her permission. And he can walk and chew gum. The crew can report to him in this science lab 5 minutes at a time.
Back to the caves we go. Gray and Adira share a hug. It's great to talk, and, well, maybe they need to talk more later about important things. Why not now? The procedure is ready. It's time to keep this plot moving, you see. Through the process of the procedure, Janelle's consciousness ends up in Culber. And Pete, I say this next bit, not with sarcasm, but with great respect. It's acting time, okay? Janelle in Culber is kind of this Texas cowboy with a husky non-regional accent.
I didn't pick that up as much as you, and I really did enjoy the layer that Wilson Cruz provides here. You know, we're so used to hearing him talk and hearing him talk a little differently, nay, this unaccented accent. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Oh, I'm sorry, Pete. Can I open up my shirt a little bit? Maybe dirty up this uniform? Let's go for a walk. Stretch these legs, you know. By the way, this guy really works out. I'm telling you, this is Wilson Cruz. You are a gem.
At Starfleet HQ, in this resource committee meeting, a new starbase is requested by one of Saru, his member worlds. Delegates, out of fear of the Breen. Matt, we've said it three times now. By Beetlejuice rules, the Breen will now appear. Saru wants to be fair and will suggest an increase in patrols in that sector. The revision is adopted. During a recess, however, Duvin asks to speak with Saru and see if he knows about the conflict Tarina has had with the Vulcan purists. Duvin is concerned they will seize upon their vote today, and in politics, appearances matter. Duvin is also concerned about their announcement and Tarina's political future.
It's funny, the scene feels both familiar and new. I mean, obviously, since Disco got to this portion of the timeline, we've had some of the split in Vulcan and Navarre society. We've had in Picard some of the similar Vulcan purist Romulan, this and that, the other. So it's just, I know I took a little, I won't say exception. I was pointing out in last week's podcast how I think there was the mandate. Let's bring this, all of this, a bit more into the Star Trek fold. We're getting the Breen and the this and the that. All of this, however, felt so effortless and so authentic in a scene that, you know, has the typical circuitous Vulcan arrogance that is hiding as logic and all of that. But Pete, now let's go outside to our favorite Toronto area quarry, where Janelle.
I was going to say, in a canyon that looks nothing like the quarry Discovery has filmed at many times. I get it, like. What's that rock formation outside of Los Angeles?
Vasquez Rocks.
Yeah, I get it. It's their Vasquez Rocks. I don't know, man. Are there any other possible places? It seems like they go to the woods or this quarry.
Agree. Janelle wants to just walk and smell the air. A creature roars, initially unseen, and I was like, are they really going to do out of the Doctor Who playbook where it's a completely invisible creature? No, they're actually setting up tension for later as we hear the Itranach. It's a great way to keep folks away from the clue, this being I'll just say Predator territory here. We get a little backstory about those who came together to research the message that Captain Picard found. So kind of in our minds, continuing shortly after that episode of Next Generation. Indeed, a technology was found, and one of the group tried to activate it. He was killed. It was head shake terrible. The group ultimately decided to hide the technology. Why not just share it? And I have to confess, I had that question too. We're reminded that all of this was during the Dominion War, concern about others, keeping others out, away from it, and so forth, which is completely legit and tracks 100%. So well done, Star Trek Research Department.
Yes, the potential to be used for destruction here. Nothing was more important than protecting it. But with that and other Itranok screech, indicating it's closing in. As Raynor waits in the science lab, the door opens and he tells Tilly, who's brought Reese, that Maul and Locke have returned to Lyric, no doubt having hit a dead end at Beta Z. But she already knew that from Zora. Tilly wants to give Raynor and Reese privacy, but Raynor demands Reese tell him something he couldn't read in his file in 20 words or less. Well, he's a real shiphead, loves the Crossfield class, that is, of course, the Discovery. But there's just something about the curves of a 23rd century constitution that just gets him. More on that, Matt. But that was 22 words. Dismissed. Dr. Pollard tells Raynor the worst thing she's ever seen in sickbay was a binar with a Decalan boar worm eating its synaptic processor. Asha says that growing up on Bajor, her nicknames were Full Monopoly and Bluff Master, so she's pretty unbeatable at Tongo. Linus explains Saurians reproduce asexually, but don't meet their progeny, who are raised by the community. He's laid three clutches. Christopher says when Nilsson left for her new post on Voyager, she gave him a pet tribble, but don't worry, it was neutered. Last time Reno did this, they gave her chips. Gallo will save a drag racing story for next time and leaves. Tilly says they were in the middle of a sentence, but Raynor got the gist. She'll reluctantly send Owo in now.
We just won't see her. Back on Trill, Adira and Gray, they have that conversation. Gray is doing so well here, but things are now different between them. Pete, I am so glad that Star Trek Discovery is back here. I'm cherishing these final episodes, but this scene ends up being one that we've seen on television 1,000 times. There's no real distinguishing characteristics of this scene beyond the sci-fi Trill moment. You know, they've shared the Trill experience and so forth. It is a slow breakup scene, and they break up by the end of it.
I question bringing Ian Alexander's character back just so they can split them up. I get it. The relationship had run its course, but I was really kind of hoping for more. It's so important to the representation of these characters and their backgrounds, and you bring them back together and you split them up. Yeah. Gray recaps that they literally used to be connected, right? His consciousness inside Adira, and he's following his path while Adira's on Discovery. But no, don't change what you're doing, and I wouldn't want you to sacrifice. And again, we understand it. Gray says they could try so many different types of relationships, but Adira doesn't know if they can proceed any other way. So they come to this realization that they're breaking up, which Gray thinks is the right thing to do. but they'll always be there for one another.
Back to the quarry, Burnham wants to skip the whole clue trail, but Janal says the path requires only a worthy seeker find all the clues. It's kind of your, you know, I mean, Pete, this is the last mission. They're almost on something that's greater than a mission. It's like a final mission, a final crusade. It's like the last crusade, if you will. But is that time indeed now for a worthy person to come forward? Book notes it is a time of peace and stability and so forth. They might reflect on this further, but the predators might not be far away. So let's get our phasers out and head into an act break, and then come back at night, or judging by their shadows, it's actually shot day for night, which is not fully a criticism. I'm just not quite sure why you did it. Maybe there was a special effects reason why it was easier to have this now day for night. I will grant you it's easier to shoot during the day than at night. It's also less expensive because you need to pay people more at night and so forth. But I just want to point out it was a curious choice to all of a sudden take it to nighttime.
Janal leads them to a carving of the symbol from the diary where he built a compartment, but Book pulls Burnham back just before the Itranach lands between them and the rock. Janal explains their scales control the way light refracts, and it begins shooting barbs. He adds, once agitated, they don't back down. But Book says they need that clue. Janal tells them there's no way they're getting it tonight, and they'll die along with Culber's body, which he won't let happen, and leaves. Book tries to communicate telepathically with the Itranach, but is blocked. He leads it away, and Burnham beams to the rock, but another Itranach arrives. Book gets Burnham out of the line of fire, taking a barb to the leg, and she helps him to cover.
It's a very good and fun action scene, running, jumping, beaming, shooting, and all of that. It's a very nice moment. In the science lab, Stamets arrives with an exciting science update regarding isotope decay and backtracking and some wonderful science here. The takeaway is that the progenitor technology could bring back the dead, perhaps. This could be the greatest science moment of all time, even greater than the spore drive. But Raynor goes from engaged and interested and, you know, infinite words allowed to then he's heard all he needs to hear, and you've now gone over your 20-word cap. So thanks so much. Dismissed.
Tilly hasn't seen him that excited in a long time and asks why Raynor had to shut him down. But he got the info he needed and is moving on. Tilly takes permission to speak freely and can't see what Burnham does in Raynor. She gives him her 20 words for the giant and leaves.
Thank goodness she wasn't given 21 there. I guess I'm supposed to root for Tilly. I think in this moment is supposed to be funny and not disrespectful. I took it as more disrespectful and not funny. Pete, that's just me. Back to HQ here. Saru delicately brings up the idea of pausing the engagement announcement here. Tarina clearly does not like this, though restrained in her emotions. She ultimately walks away. There are other things to do. Pete, that is what's called Vulcan angry. Tarina, however, does see Duvin's fingerprints on this situation. Those are metaphorical fingerprints there. And is angry at the idea that she, you know, president of Navarre, is being managed behind the scenes by these two gentlemen, Duvin and Saru. Back to the quarry we go. Where Book is healed up with future tech. I did like the little thing. We've already had the previous scene of, you know, what is 1, 2, 3? Do we go on 3? Is it 1, 2, 3? Go on, go, and all of that. And here Burnham pulls out the barb with, we're going to do 1, 2, 3, 3 pulls it out. Yeah, it's your standard get rid of the loose tooth moment here. But wait, Pete, what's that over there amongst the rocks?
Yes, those are eggs. Burnham says Janal was right. They'll have to come back, but their transporters won't work because they're too close to the rock and its mineral composition is interfering. Burnham has an idea of basic xenoanthropology. Show respect to what they're studying. Book tries to stop her, but she puts her phaser away and steps out so as to not seem like a threat. She asks Book to try to communicate with the Itrinox again, and they let them go. They find Janal laying on a rock, gazing at the stars. Only thing that was missing was a piece of wheat that you can't pluck out of a Toronto-adjacent quarry. Burnham asks why he had them draw their phasers to incite the Itrinox in their breeding ground. But he had to know what they'd do when they encountered a vastly different life form. Would they see it as an enemy or try to connect, which is vital for whoever gets the progenitor's tech? He reaches in a rock and gives them the next piece of the puzzle. Book asks if Janal would have let the Itrinox kill them. Yup. The piece has the coordinates to the next clue.
Back at HQ, Saru apologizes and recognizes his role in the conflict in this relationship. Indeed, having a conflict in a romantic relationship is new to him. Again, he acknowledges his mistake. Tarina puts it in the context of what I can infer is previous relationships, even if they were of the Vulcan variety. Conflict in a relationship is part of a relationship. She gives context here. She needs to deal not only with the opinions of the Vulcan purists, but all on her world. The engagement announcement shows that there is no secret, and had word come out without an announcement, then it would have appeared to many on her world that she was trying to hide it. With that, with context in place, with Tarina appropriately empowered as a, you know, responsible professional woman in this universe, Saru is ready to announce.
Back in the caves, Janal is out of Culber, and Kazalra tells him he feels deep gratitude for the extra moments of life he gave him. Burnham will assist with protection from the others who might come to Trill and try to learn the secret, but Z says their security is more than capable, as is easily disproven by the end of the episode. Burnham tells Culber to beam back to sickbay to be checked out. Same for Book and his leg. She'll see Adira back on board and thanks Kalzara. Now Kalzara can rest. In the lounge, a Ferengi bartender pours Tilly a sluggo cola as Raynor finds her. The bartender welcomes him to Reds, which is the first time we've ever been given a name for this lounge.
A lounge that is made me think of the similar lounge on the Strange New Worlds and version of the Enterprise, and how on the Enterprise is so kind of brightly lit and so forth, and how this lounge is so in line with the color palette of Discovery, you know. And I like the Enterprise better, not because it's the Enterprise, I think because of lessons that the Star Trek, the makers of Star Trek have learned along the way. Regardless though, Pete, we're not here to merely talk about sets nonstop. Raynor and Tilly catch up. He finds a necessary divide between leadership and friendship on this ship. He recaps all the things that he actually has learned about the crew in his brief interactions with them, reaching accurate conclusions about, well, he does the first three and then offers to stop. Tilly once again lectures him and then continues to walk away, which, you know, there's some disrespect there, but I think it's in line with the Tilly character and so forth.
Tilly points out analyzing is not the same as connecting or showing respect, which goes those both ways. As Culber savors a scotch, Burnham sits to tell him they're making preparations to jump to the coordinates of the next clue in Zenkati space, where they can't go until diplomats clear the way. Culber is still recovering from his experience. It made him think of his abuela, who was also a doctor, keeping all sorts of religious icons around her home to remind her not everything has to have an answer, but he's not sure about it. Burnham is also searching, and maybe the search for the progenitor's tech will provide answers for both of them. In the caves, Gray reflects how every life is a series of changes. Over a montage, Book looks at Maul's file, Saru and Tarina garden. Culber stares out into the stars, and Raynor watches the crew of Discovery in the lounge and attempts to further size them up. Stamets slides the next piece of the puzzle on. Burnham does Vulcan meditation. Adira takes Gray's hand, and the Bix symbiont swims off.
The ceremony, as overseen by Gray, comes to an end. All disperse and do an arm handshake thing, this one to that, this one to the other, and so forth, including one hooded figure who leaves what eagle-eyed viewers of Star Trek clearly know is a tracking dot onto, putting such a dot onto Adira's uniform. For that hooded figure, Pete, is none other than Mal to end the episode. Pete, we have a tactical analysis of this week's threats. Let's talk about the rising Breen threat.
Unseen Breen, but still felt. That in all three of the first episodes, they've mentioned these characters. I feel like this really has to come to pass at this point. You know, these member worlds that Saru's dealing with, the warring factions of the Breen that they're afraid of. So see that there are some that we can't get along with. There are others we can, in typical Star Trek form.
Pete, I wasn't sold after the first two episodes. Maybe that's because it was all done in one, you know, the two episodes in 1 week and so forth. But rule of three says, now that it's been brought up three times, A, we get to dig deeper into that as a threat, and B, if there is a mandate to dig more into Star Trek's past here, you know, I know we had the Breen as baddies on Deep Space Nine at times. There still is much mystery with that race and so forth. So story opportunities abound, both in terms of conflict.
What if they got their hands on the progenitor's tech, Matt?
Pete, then they would go from last place baddies to first place worsies, I suppose. Pete, on this notion here of the Itranox, I mean, a Star Trek lesson here, that they go from feared baddies to misunderstood parents just trying to protect their brood.
This footage of the fight of the, you know, attempt to get the MacGuffin was some of the first put forward for the fifth season. I was a little worried, oh, CGI creature. But that's why you can't judge it until you've got the whole, and they sell it. All right, the cloak refracting scale thing, you see the practicality of it. You know, that is so we don't have to make a whole thing and all that. But they serve their purpose. And as you said, that they were really protecting their young, not viciously there to kill you. So the carcass we saw earlier, that was a threat to the babies and not a horrible warlike message.
I will say I'm glad that they're intelligent enough to see threat versus not threat, because I have not had the pleasure of going on a safari in Africa, that sort of thing. But I don't know that, like, coming out of the little hidey area and approaching the lions and saying, "But look, my head is down and my hands are out," the lions will know. I mean, I am friend, not foe. I think very quickly you will go from friend. How about this way, Pete? I think you'll very quickly be invited over for dinner as the main course. But Pete, talking about threats here, the threat of Maul's cloaked tracker. That was a nice way to end the episode. That was a nice way. You know, we had reminders throughout that, you know, Maul and Locke could be here at any time. They're not here yet. There's been no evidence that they're here. And to turn all of that kind of on its ear. And no, she's let somebody else do all the work, and now she's going to track them to the next spot. It all is in line with the character.
Yes, and that the Trill security wasn't up to the task.
Oh, Guardian Z, you goof. Let's use our long-range sensors to scan for some theories. Pete, it's going to be my go-to each and every single week. We are reminded that Maul has the good in her. She's like family to Book, even though she's doing these bad things. Do you think, Pete, they're setting up Maul goes to the academy in...
Dude, Starfleet get out academy. Of my notes. It says, is Maul Starfleet by the end of the season?
100%.
Yeah. I mean, even further with the, well, you know, her mom was dead by the time she was 14, not the mom, Maul, but, you know, also Cleveland the fourth had left her while she was 8. She's always come out on top. Here she's resourceful. Gee, you had one misunderstood threat. Could it not be that there is still good in her and we can bring her back to the light side of the force here? I'm going to go one further, Matt. The progenitor's tech might even reanimate dead organisms. You mean like Cleveland Booker the Fourth, or the ex-Cleveland Booker the Fourth misses?
It's a really weird line. Because it's unambiguous bringing people back from the dead. It's unambiguously stated. From a dramatic perspective, again, you want to say it's pseudoscience of the 32nd century. I have no argument with that. However, they're going to explain it with graviton waves and Vetrion beams and so forth. Yes, is it possible in sci-fi? 1,000%. But dramatically, now people who are dead get to come. Like, what does that do for you? What does that do for you as a story to sit and
are
go?
Are you saying that the cameo beam that they will establish in the 8th episode, oh, look, it is Dr. Crusher, who was one of the 3 other scientists who was not the 4th one, who we don't name, who touched the progenitor's tech, who died horribly off screen. These are story construction devices. But yeah, I mean, the reanimation of dead characters and to do that in a quest with Maul and why she might be searching for this tech beyond the misguided of, we can make lots of money from it, or it's somehow linked to my possibly shape-shifting love interest. Again, man, the hand of the writer is a little too present here. I'm willing to be wrong on this, but I get the sense we're not.
You mention the absent Locke here. To me, it's in line with something we discussed last week in terms of like Maul being an easy makeup job and Locke not being an easy makeup job.
In my mind, man, wow, the girl with the black roots and the blonde hair or the white hair is easier to do than the guy in the full on 3 a.m. makeup.
Yeah, exactly. Plus, to be fair, you know, the Trill look more humanoid than reptiloid and so forth. You know, it all kind of, we're all swimming in the same direction here. Pete, we now have what? We have two pieces in the puzzle container for a total of five. Do you think we're going to continue with one a week for the next 3 weeks? I mean, that would then take us to roughly the midpoint. That would give us plenty of space to deal with the consequences in the second half. Do you think that's the pace we're going to stick with?
I don't know that you can or you should necessarily do that. This idea that you're physically putting it together and then what will it do? Is that the tech itself to get all those pieces and then be able to do it? And then the idea too, you know, all right, it can make life. The converse would also be the threat, right? It can take life away. It can reanimate those dead organisms. It's basically the Genesis device.
Yeah, which I know I had pointed out last week as well. And I don't mind us being in somewhat similar territory there. I mean, I think in terms of big broad strokes and galactic threats, there's kind of a limit to how far you can go. The bringer of life and death, the weapon, the tool, that's, you know, super compelling. I don't know how you reach a different conclusion than with the Genesis device, which is it is more weapon than not. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how the second half of the season unfolds, how the use of this device unfolds, and also, you know, I don't mean to be flippant about, like, look, there's clues that they knew this was the last season, but we have Burnham and Culber reflecting here that the journey to find this galactic origin of species also is a journey to learn more about oneself. You know, are we setting up some sort of, you know, and thus Burnham transports in time back to be with her brother, you know, or something like that. It'll just be interesting. Are these threads that just come together in the last 3 minutes, or are they threat of the final episode, i.e. the things that they shot the last 2 days of filming after the cancellation announcement, or is there more to it?
Well, you invoked Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade, and, you know, Indiana Jones is certainly an inspiration for this last season mission. Will there be a moment with the progenitor's tech, a grail choice, perhaps, Matt? Someone will choose poorly and be horribly killed. We'll see. We know it's not going to be Rainer, because they put it out he would have been returning for a sixth season. But Commander here, so demoted, right? Not just, hey, you're not a captain anymore, but actually demoted to Commander as he switches over to First Officer. Not what I assumed the Spock situation, where he was captain and you also had Kirk, however, in the chair.
Yeah, look, I get that Callum Keith Rennie is playing a supporting recurring character, not, you know, the new lead of the show and things of that sort. Still, I think it would have been interesting. Like, I wouldn't have minded the scene or the montage or whatever of you know, him needing to turn in that captain's pip or just things like that. There's a certain degree in which he's been very ably introduced in the first two episodes, and then now we are reintroducing him, but we're not doing any of the stuff that's in between his getting in trouble. I guess he was already in trouble when she made the offer to him at the end of 502, but I guess I would have liked a little bit more in that regard to just help puff up his character, as opposed to these bunch of scenes that show him ostensibly as a jerk. I just want to point out, Pete, if those were Vulcan ears, not his other race, that I'm sure you will know off the top of your head.
Kelleran.
Yeah, like, if he was Vulcan, nobody would sit and go, here is my 20 words, in which I say, you are a big giant, oh, I'm out of words. Like, you would say, ooh, it is his culture to be this way. I mean, he must be respectful of the culture, but because he's being written as a thing, I guess, to give Tilly things to do, now he's a goofy jerk, not we need to be respectful of the way he does things. And you know the rank that he does have as commander, contrasted by Tilly, who is consistently disrespectful to him, which I guess is in line with we want to give Tilly the Tilly energy that she has. It's just, to me, an energy that works less with her as a seasoned veteran officer that's now a lieutenant, not an ensign, not a cadet.
Other than Reese, really seems like a beta shift on the bridge there. Naya and Arav and, you know, a bunch of those other characters maybe we've seen quickly off to the side. Great that they all got named and, you know, hey, I'm into this and I do that. But as you said, you know, Detmer and Awoshikun and here Nilsen named as having gone to the Voyager, I hope as captain. Yeah, a little conspicuous in their absence.
Yeah, and I mean, look, just because Detmer and Owo appeared chronologically in 501, that doesn't mean that they were, like, that easily is a pickup shot that could have been done later in shooting. I mention that just because I'm looking at, for example, the IMDb of Emily Kutz, who plays Detmer. My hope would be the reason that they're getting so little screen time, the reason that we've been able to open things up to another shift into some brand new characters, my hope is that the reason is that you could go to their IMDb and say, that's because, Pete, post-COVID, they were both really busy. Detmer's IMDb, and, you know, IMDb is not always perfect, but Detmer's IMDb does not, Emily Kutz's IMDb does not suggest as such. So I don't know. I mean, I dig these supporting characters and the fact that they're not around. Okay, you're giving us other supporting characters. That's great and all. Where's my OG people? Like, there's some confusion and frustration there on my part.
So the Dominion War was raging as the Progenitors storyline was continued off screen. Will they finally connect, having invoked the Dominion here, Matt, the Progenitors and Progenitor hologram played by Salome Jens and the founders of the Dominion, including the female founder, Changeling, played by Salome Jens?
I feel like it's one of those things where it's all right there. And the fact, you know, we discussed this last week as well. Salome Jens still alive at 88,
still working
as of the last couple of years.
God bless her.
It's all right there. I do feel like sometimes Discovery has set this bar for itself to kind of take us into new story corners. I'll say Strange New Worlds, all lowercase, versus the uppercase Strange New World show that is very consciously kind of, you know, setting up prequel and sequel and kind of being more playful with that which has already been established. your theory is very, very sound, and I think that ultimately I will not be surprised if old female changeling comes out of the goo and says, I am the progenitor, or you know, that sort of thing. But part of me is also like, I feel like I could imagine that in the writing room of Discovery when this season was written, maybe that was pitched, and it was like, we could do that, or we could go for a grand slam home run that goes out of the ballpark and into the next ballpark with something that's just so uniquely our own and not tied to the legacy of Star Trek. So I like your theory. I like your theory. And I think it's one of those things where, Pete, we're going to be doing the season 5 wrap in, you know, X number of weeks. And we're going to look back and say, it was a cool ending. Why didn't you just, even if you couldn't get Salome Jens, why couldn't you get somebody else and put makeup on there and go, for I'm the female changeling who also was, like, why not? That's what I say, Pete, why not?
I mean, you have it in all creation, right? In all sentient life, there's explicably an answer there. But I do worry anytime you're constructing a story around answers to the biggest question. You know, I mean, we still don't know what those God need with a starship. Speaking of starships, Matt, that 23rd century Constitution class. I wonder when that might come up this season.
Yeah, I still have not seen the, you know, upcoming on this season, but as we discussed last week, I've seen the stills of a Constitution class coming forward, and now, oh man, Pete, whatever episode that might happen, to have Reese sit and go, what? Do you know what ship that is? That's, you know, that's a Constitution class ship. It seems that we're setting that up, and you know, and that's something I wholeheartedly welcome. Particularly, look, the Lower Deck Strange New World, Lower Deck Strange New Worlds crossover was just, in many ways, a perfect Star Trek episode. I mean, Pete, I could not imagine when they might have to come face to face with the Strange New Worlds crew. I will point out that next week's episode is entitled Face the Strange. Just want to point that out. Or maybe if they want to consider what it's like looking across the view screen at others who are on a similar trek amongst the stars, maybe it's episode 505, Mirrors. You know, it's like I'm looking in a mirror as to the old, but the new.
Either of them would apply. Let's not forget that strange means something totally different in Canada.
Yeah.
That's a South Park reference.
Pete, explain the South Park reference.
I can't because of our Apple Podcast rating.
Fair enough. Well, I don't know. This episode reminded me of some of the stuff that I like about Discovery but don't love. It'll be interesting.
See, it's funny that you say that because this episode reminded me of what I love about Star Trek Discovery. And it is perhaps the most Star Trek Discovery episode to ever be discovered, in that you have the science, you have the action, and you have people communicating how they feel about other people. And at the end of the day, the legacy of Star Trek Discovery is just that. It is both a holdover of what came before, as well as a deepening of connection between characters, between the examination of their relationships and the representation of characters we had not yet seen.
How very well said. And with that, let's open Hailing Frequencies.
Hailing Frequencies open, sir.
Pete, let's start with our Twitter poll in which people were able to rate the episode. Of course, by worms. It's a trill episode. One worm. Worm needed a bird, 0%. Two worms, time to talk and reflect, 11.1%. Three worms, great outing, got 22.2%. And then four worms, stellar sci-fi, got 66.7%. Looks like Twitter rounded that up a smidge.
As long as there's no Dalakian boar worms, I think we're good.
Absolutely. Some replies on Twitter. JT Adkins, JTA is me, said, while this one won't be on my list of favorites, I did enjoy it. I particularly appreciated the Tilly-Raymer dynamic. Well written, well played. I'll admit that the gray, here's what we learned about life this episode, monologue with montage, felt overly instructive to me. Nonetheless, an enjoyable outing, and I'm looking forward to next week. What's in Maul's evil space water droplet? Pete, we had just assumed it was a tracker. Now JT has me thinking, are there any other options there that you want to put forth as a theory?
The scene they show during the ready room for next week gives more. All right, it's a tracking device. You have to assume it has other abilities and ways to grab intel. So, you know, we don't just think of these story plot devices as, oh, I put a thing on you and now I know where you are. It can do other things, right?
Ooh, exciting prospect there. We heard from Spider-Ham Lincoln at TessLC139. This is a solid third episode of the final season. I like the scenes of Commander Raynor's integration and Tilly's fed up-ishness with him and Saru learning what it means to be a partner. Wilson Cruz, however, took it to another level as the titular Janal. Bravo. James is sagacious, big killing on Twitter, says this show makes me love it. The cast is so amazing, and our new number one is becoming a scene stealer. I could watch Reno talk for hours. Cruz looked like he was having fun and like having fun around him. Like everyone was having fun around him. Maybe a little typo there. Maybe we'll get to see the original host back in SNG days. Next, we hear from It's Twitter Not Life at KCLYLE1. Overall, another good episode. I'm really sorry to see this show go, even though I have some issues with it. It continues to be the way it brings the center to Burnham at the expense of other characters. Now we bring in a new number one, but for what reason, I'm not sure. More drama. Although I did like the whole interaction with Tilly. Always great to see Tig Notaro back and every line delivered with perfection. While not a Culber episode, heaven forbid another regular character gets a spotlight, but at least Wilson Cruz gets some more screen time. Maybe it's just me, but I have zero interest in Saru and Tarina as a couple. But Saru's quarters are great. Might this be the last time we see Gray, or will we go back to the Trill pool, pun intended? How do they not know Maul's on Trill? Anyway, until next time. Pete, I would agree that through the lens of Strange New Worlds that dares to make in the course of 20 episodes, I think has made every main character the main star of at least one episode.
Except one.
That's true. Except for Ortegas. So most of the characters, it is a bit of a reminder that that's not how Discovery does things. Discovery, you know, Burnham gets the A plot, Saru gets the B plot, and then other people scramble for the C plot. Generally. And tweet, the last Pete was by somebody who'd like us to watch their video about their thoughts on this episode. And I personally make a point to not sample other people's stuff before we podcast it, because I don't want to rip things off. It's one thing, Pete, if you're watching the Ready Room, I think that's not other people's stuff. That's part of what the show is offering there. But good luck to you, person who made a YouTube video.
Yeah.
Pete, what do you have there on Facebook?
Jeff Beeden messaged us on our Facebook page for Disco 503. Do you think they really needed to demote Raynor? He could have been first officer and remained captain, I guess, instead of an early retirement, which I took to mean was an honorable discharge as captain. He gets demoted. Did Stamets just say the progenitors made a Genesis device? Didn't the Federation do that 800 years ago? Is this just an episode to showcase the Doctor? Is he just not in the next episodes? Ugh. Such filler. Need more meat, less carbs. ah, and to say bye to the ghost, not a ghost, trill person, I miss Jadzia. Ah, the old disappearing viridium patch to track them trick. And I wrote back there, as I, Pete, understand it, like Spock under Kirk, Rayner was still at the rank of captain. This was before I rewatched it and took my notes, so I was wrong about that. I did not hear, and rewatching, there was not a Genesis, a direct Genesis device reference, so that wouldn't apply. Colbert is in the rest of the season. He was, however, not available to film the little extra they did for the finale, which essentially was done over a weekend. Jeff thanked us for our time.
I would agree, you know, as we discussed earlier in this episode, there are shades of the Genesis device here. It will certainly be interesting to see how the rest of the season unfolds, and kind of where, what twists and turns have already been hinted at, but we don't fully appreciate the direction here. To the email inbox we go, hearing from Josephina, who says it was cool. It was so cool hearing from all your listeners. I thought it was cool that we basically got a Culber episode. No complaints here. He's so handsome. Well, other than this, felt more like a filler episode. I like how they gave him and Michael dialogue that reminds me of Crusher and Picard, without the sexual innuendos, of course. Culber, of course, was the one possessed. It was cool seeing him transition from Culber to Janelle, like when he says, wow, this guy really works out. I can't believe after that whole threatening nature walk in the canyon, the puzzle piece was between an unsecured pile of rocks out in the open. The hype didn't deliver. If this was the Voyager crew, they would have scanned the planet for the same substance their puzzle piece was made with. Unless the mineral present, as mentioned, in the rocks blocked the ship scan. So our new number one is trying to get to know everyone in the ship by interrogating them. I like the random stories they were telling, which gave us, the viewer, more character development. But he sort of redeemed himself, basically apologizing to Tilly in the most unreal way. Like, I think it was supposed to be an apology, but it also seemed like he just came to her to prove his point. But then Tilly totally rebutted his argument and dropped the mic. I shouldn't be surprised if she'd come off as a teacher mentally, because that's who she is. Oh, I appreciate how Tarina stood up for herself too. It sucks that in the year 3191, female leadership is still being mansplained. Pete, let me pause Josephine's words there. That is an excellent point that I think we hinted at, but did not articulate as...
Tarina don't need no protector, man. Yeah. And, you know, that she both clearly and succinctly shuts that down, that she doesn't need to female splain to the man, dude, you screwed up. That it's quick and you get to the root of it, and it didn't get preachy. And Saru's like, oh, okay, I understand now, and I will stand by you, not try to shield you, for I am a male alien who can protect you. But no, somebody said it before, a partner, that we do this together. And also that she's president of a reunified two planets, that this lady has a massive responsibility. She was elected to do so. Hey, bro, she don't need you to stand in front of her and take flack. Tarina can Vulcan salute her own flack right out of the way.
Well said there, Pete. And back to Josephina's words here. In her case, she understands her own interests better than anyone else, and Duvin undermines her. But when Saru tried to school her and then she put down the cup, the look on Saru, even with all the prosthetics on, he had that face of, uh-oh, I screwed up.
Her cup put down, even that moment of acting.
Yeah.
was great.
Josephina says, I wish this episode was exciting as the season opener. I think Reno said it best, so I'll leave you all with it. Last time I did this, they gave me chips. We need the chips. Semper Fi, Josephina. P.S., she says, I don't think people will have ice drinks in the future. Maybe it's just me, but I never see anyone drinking their drink on the rocks in any bar scene, even on Strange New Worlds. If frozen pina coladas and margaritas aren't a thing in the future, ugh. Pete, I'll reply to that by saying I know why that is, because ice cubes are noisy and frozen slushy drinks melt. So therefore, you never see either unless the story really calls for it.
Yeah, it's a production situation, but they totally exist in Replicators, man. So they'll still be there.
You drink those margaritas back in your. Yes. Back in your quarters when the camera's not on.
The camera is not there. Correct.
With that, Pete, let's hear from Admiral Fred from the Netherlands.
Hello, Matt and Pete and all listeners to Fantastic Geek. This is Fred from the Netherlands with a little feedback for Star Trek Discovery Season 5, Episode 3, and coming back a little bit to Episode 2, because I didn't give feedback last week about Episode 2. But first off, I want to mention something about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I finally landed up in Season 7 and I'm listening to your podcast there. The last few seasons I listened to the podcast The Sandbox of Mike and Dave, but they didn't do Season 7, so now I switched to your podcast. Last week we were talking about Fred, the synth from Discovery. Well, the first few episodes of Season 7 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you also encounter Freddie Malek, a.k.a. Wilfred Malek, one of the founders of Hydra. So, a lot of Freddies these days, and a lot of Fantastic Geek these days. Okay, about Episode 2, Under the Twin Moons. I thought it had a high Indiana Jones feeling to it, and I wonder if that will remain in the rest of this season. Because it's a quest. It really is a quest for all these pieces of the puzzle. And that's actually literally because if you see Episode 3, they will get a new piece. It's a nice way of showing all kinds of cultures and races. So I'm looking forward to a kind of Star Trek tour. When we go to Episode 3, it's surely less action-packed. Well, that's one of the things you can expect a little bit on Thrill. And of course, the whole Saru story is getting about love and diplomacy and is quite diverging actually from the main quest story. So I'm wondering how that will evolve, whether this Saru story will intertwine later or it will be a sideline or it will be a line that will end and somehow reconnect in the season finale or the series finale actually. It was nice to see Dr. Hugh Culber in a kind of other role, although he blended quite through, I think. Although in the talk with Michael at the end, he says, I was there, but I wasn't. I found him quite there. But nevertheless, a nice performance. Also very nice is, of course, the interaction between Tilly and Rayner and how she had filled her 20 words. Although 21 would have been better. Okay, that will be all for now. Greetings, all the best, Fred from the Netherlands.
Pete, Fred reminding us there of how grateful we are to keep our podcast feeds evergreen and glad that Fred has joined us, perhaps a bit after the fact, has joined us nonetheless in celebrating that final season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So thank you for that, Fred. Also, how unique it must be for him just to look around and there's Freds all over in his personal pop culture.
Better not be a Hydra situation. Cut off one Fred, two more take its place.
Fred mentioning the Indiana Jones type theme to this season. I know that's something we've kicked around in this podcast and in the prior, you know, talking about the prior episodes. Pete, what other, I'm not trying to propose here, you know, we get an Indiana Jones crossover Harrison Ford, but what other ways do you think this Indiana Jones theme, this search for the archaeological prize theme, how do you think that might express itself as the season unfolds?
the clues building toward the ultimate MacGuffin, right, of the progenitor's tech as they assemble whatever this will wind up being, right? A key, the thing itself, the race to get there first, all these ideas, you know, further advanced by Indiana Jones.
Pete, this episode and indeed all that we do made possible by those who support us on patreon.com/fantasticgeek. Listeners, you've made it to the end, so of course we want to give thanks to those who make it possible over there on patreon.com/fantasticgeek.
Everybody who contributes gets access to exclusive content, all sorts of levels to choose from, but it takes just $1 a month to get in that door. Can't contribute right now? Get yourself over to Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating or a review. Helps us just as much. Could really use some help with The Acolyte right now. It's somebody that did a drive-by and just gave it a 1-star review and a rating, I should say. Didn't even make words to match their feelings, probably because they can't. But if you could go there and balance that out, so yeah, it doesn't shoot us down some algorithm.
It is weird, Pete, how there seems to always be one-star review on our new podcast that never
right?
warrant.
I do wonder at times.
But Pete, let's keep the Star Trek conversation going, the Star Wars conversation, Marvel, etc. How can people be in touch with you over there on your social media?
You can find me on Twitter, on Threads, on Blue Sky, at Peter, PieterJKetelaar, KetelaaR, 12,600 followers, can't be wrong.
And while I'm personally on Twitter, looking back lost, do be in touch with the podcast. Comment on fantasticgeek.com. Check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Gmail, and Threads, where we are Fantastic Geek as well. But wait, Pete, there's more.
Facebook.com/fantasticgeek, all one word, with the P and the H like it today.
Next stop is Star Trek Sunday as we talk about the next episode of Disco. Before you know it, Pete, it'll be May. Those episodes will be counting down even faster. We'll be turning our attention to The Acolyte, but certainly happy that it's clear Star Trek in the near term. With that, I will say adios to all our listeners and give you, Pete, the final word.
Connection isn't a skill, it's a choice.